Oh, man, it's 6 p.m., and that means it's time for The Bullpen, starring the one and only Joe George.
Thanks, Joe.
Yeah!
Listen and be fascinated as the longtime producer becomes untethered by lesser talent and can truly talk sports the way he was meant to, with no reins or restrictions, with stellar takes and perfect diction.
I'm assistant regional manager. I should know first.
Assistant to the regional manager.
Yeah, okay.
Now, live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's The Bullpen with Joe George.
Welcome into The Bullpen here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. I am Joe George. You can find me on Twitter at Joe George Radio. We're here with you until 7 o'clock, leading you into Soccer Matters with Glenn Davis. We got Brian behind the glass on Twitter at Sacked by BMAC. We got a lot of stuff to get into today. Josh Beard from Connor and Beard will join us at 6:30. We'll do our five takeaways from the NFL and college football weekend today. Since we had a shorter show yesterday, we're going to talk some Astros. My goal in 15 minutes is to put all your brains in a blender and give you the worst Astros would-you-rathers I possibly can. That's my goal.
My goal is to make Brian... chose violence?
I'm choosing violence. Wow. I want BMAC to throw his phone with how bad these choices are. I almost shouldn't have put them on the rundown so you couldn't steal them or look at them and want to see the honest pain in your reaction. But we got to start with C.J. Stroud because we just had a
because he's good
wild,
at football.
We just had a wild ending to the Killer Bees.
See, I'm coming in fresh to this. I heard there was an argument going on and there was something related to a caller and a bad take. But,
yes.
And Dak Prescott was involved, but I don't know any of the details.
So this is what we did. So at 5 o'clock, we went through every at 4:45 and 5. We went through every single team in the NFL and their starting quarterback. And if we would have C.J. Stroud in front of them, it was the best 2 out of 3 vote. So there was a couple that Jeremy said no on.
Sure.
That we said yes. Same thing for me. Like for me, I said at this moment I would still have Trevor Lawrence in front of C.J. Stroud. But we came to a collective decision, and the Killer Bees have decided collectively that C.J. Stroud is the 7th best quarterback in the NFL right now.
Yeah, I guess it depends on how you phrase it, because I went through this exercise myself and coming up with some topics, I think, for a bullpen show that never happened. But I basically went quarterback by quarterback, or starting quarterback by starting quarterback, obviously, throughout the league and asked myself, would I trade C.J. Stroud for this quarterback straight up? And that's kind of basically how I didn't look at, you know, career stats or, you know, power rankings. Just like, would I trade C.J. Stroud straight up for this quarterback? And I, too, came up with 6 quarterbacks that I would trade straight up. Now, I didn't have Trevor Lawrence. Overall, your list looks pretty good that we have here in the rundown.
Yeah, Mahomes,
I'm mostly in agreement here.
Mahomes, Burrow, Allen, Herbert, Hurts, Jackson. Now, that's not
absolutely
order. It's pretty similar to that order, especially, I mean, the top two are the top two. Mahomes and Burrow are right there. I think for me personally, Jalen Hurts is next on that list. And then I don't really honestly know where I want to put Josh Allen, Justin Herbert, and Lamar Jackson. But I think CJ comes in next on that list. Now, I would have him 8th. But I'm going to stand by my show because they'll get mad at me. At least one of them listens because Joel Blank's a good teammate. He listens to the show.
So Jeremy is not a good
Jeremy
teammate.
Jeremy does not listen to the show.
Process of elimination means Jeremy's not a good teammate.
I don't think Jeremy listens to this show. So I would have C.J. Stroud 8th. I still have Trevor Lawrence in front of him at this moment. Now, C.J. Stroud is obviously playing out of his mind. He's been incredible. But the thing about, and then what happened was this Cowboys fan named Al called in, and he called us homers. He said lots of mean things to us, Brian.
He hurt your feelings?
No, because he sucked. Sorry, Al, if you're listening. You don't really suck. I'm just going to say that. But here's the thing. There's something that Al said, though, and that it's been a common theme amongst C.J. Stroud and the Texans so far this season that's been very prevalent. I put this video out yesterday on social media that I think from the show yesterday that I think C.J. Stroud will, at a minimum, take the Houston Texans to a Super Bowl in his career. The thing is, the reaction from that, and
it feels
that,
like we've just done that
I don't.
Before. Like, I mean, like, you, I think we were both at the flagship at the time
with Deshaun.
Yeah, when Deshaun got drafted by the Texans, we had Dabo Swinney come on the show and said, the Texans just drafted Michael Jordan, you just won a Super Bowl. And we were all, I think, on board with that. Like, hell yeah, you're right, Dabo. And then...
You're right. Like, here's the thing. And I hear your argument on that, okay? But if the Houston Texans never hired Jack Easterby, don't you still feel like that could have come true? That, like, if the... Now, the massage thing happened.
Because the massage... Yeah, on the field, possibly.
Yeah, and that's where, like, Deshaun Watson, I feel like... I get the angst of what Deshaun Watson meant to the city, what we thought he was going to mean to the Houston Texans franchise, and what happened after. But the reality is, it's like, he's a weirdo, and he hated the Texans
mildly,
organization.
Yeah, putting it mildly.
Yeah, mildly weirdo is like the... Like, that's the
nicest way you could put it, yeah.
Probably the nicest way I've ever said it. He's a pervert. And, like, and he hated...
He's a criminal. We can say it.
And he hated the chaplain. And so he threw a temper tantrum and demanded his way out of the city. So, yes, there's a lot of things that can go wrong. But, like, the number one thing I've seen from the reaction of the video, the reaction of the CJ Stroud stuff today and this week on the shows here on the station, honestly, even across, like... Because the national media is catching on, too. Like, Even Colin Cowherd, I'm pretty confident.
Is he trying to delete all of the audio he had during the summer?
He can't do that.
Texans?
But like the morons of the industry, aka Colin and Skip, are putting him in the top 10 category. And my problem with this conversation is that people want to keep saying it's too early. And my question for you is why? Like, why is it too early to say that C.J. Stroud is not the seventh best quarterback in the NFL? And the reason why I think it's not too early is because when you look at the history of the NFL, sometimes you're right. And sometimes you're wrong, okay? There are guys that, like, flourished early and then they flame out. Someone tried to use Mac Jones as a comparison. Mac Jones was a good quarterback, not a great quarterback, and led his team to the playoffs. If you're trying to use Mac Jones in a conversation with C.J. Stroud, you're blind and don't watch football.
Yeah,
because, like, I can't help you in there.
It's a completely apples and oranges conversation. Mac Jones was good, and he was a part of a team victory, where C.J. Stroud is dragging a bunch of rookies and one-year contract veterans to wins that Vegas and everyone else didn't expect him to get.
Yeah, exactly. And then the other side of this, though, is that there is history in the NFL that says when a quarterback is a starter in their first year, they are who they tell you they are. Patrick Mahomes, I think, is now a great example. But there's guys beyond that. He's 28 years old when he gets his first job as a starting quarterback for the St. Louis Rams. But Kurt Warner told you who he was when he threw for 4,100 yards and won a Super Bowl with the Rams. He was a Hall of Fame quarterback. If you went on radio and were like, it's too early for Kurt, I get it. He's 28. He had a weird story. But at the end of the day, you were right. You were right about Patrick Mahomes. We saw it with our eyes. We saw how good he was.
It sounds like you're kind of expecting a linear trajectory where there's not going to be...
I don't think there's going to be this downfall. I don't think you play this good in the NFL and then you fall apart. Like, the two examples I used earlier when I was producing for Connor and Beer a little bit was Andrew Luck and RG3. Now, Andrew Luck was always a great quarterback when he's in the NFL, and he's in the same conversation with CJ. The record that CJ just broke was Andrew Luck's. Andrew Luck's career was going up, 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 up. And the only reason why it failed was because the Indianapolis Colts failed to protect him. He got sacked a gajillion times, and he retired early.
He did get within one game of a Super Bowl.
And, like, yeah, if C.J. Stroud has to retire in 5 years because he gets sacked 300 million times, I'm wrong. But
yeah,
like,
and that's the obvious, because I think I'm definitely willing to go with you in that if the Texans don't make a Super Bowl during C.J. Stroud's time here in the city of Houston, and by and large, it will not be because C.J. Stroud, you know, didn't do enough, right? It's going to be because the team didn't do a good job of putting a team around them. They mishandled the salary cap and had to cut some guys that would have been key contributors. Guys around him got hurt, or he gets hurt, or the entire system falls apart because maybe Nick Caserio starts missing with all his picks, you know, throwing on top of his misses with Kenyon Green and Derek Stingley so far. So I do think that C.J. Stroud has shown the talent that if they don't make a Super Bowl with him, it's going to be because of outside factors most likely and not Stroud himself.
100%. And this is my other part that I have a problem with about that it's too early for C.J. Stroud. Texans fans specifically, like, I ask you this. Is it too early to say Kenyon Green's not good?
Right, right.
Is it too early to say that they shouldn't? Like, why can you say that Nick Caserio messed up by taking Derek Stingley Jr. over Sauce Gardner? Why was it okay for the Arizona Cardinals to move on from Josh Rosen? All of you crush me. OG said it yesterday on the Twitch. What does Joe know what he's talking about? He still thinks Justin Fields is good. All of you said Justin Fields not good, and I was wrong. Why? There was still plenty of time. Right. Why wasn't it too early for Justin Fields? Like, if CJ Stroud sucked ass right now, we'd be saying bust. If Bryce Young was doing this, and CJ was Bryce, this town would be having mental issues.
Because they would be talking about
week 18 nonstop. Like, if it's not too early to say someone sucked, it's not too early to say they're really damn good, because that's what he is. He is a franchise quarterback. He is him. And I'm not going to back down.
Did you just say he is him?
I know, Josh Chevy.
No, come on.
Josh Chevy said it was fine yesterday when I said it. He said it was fine.
Yeah, no, you're in part control of his hours. He can't come out and tell you sound stupid.
I say it's fine. I'm going to roll with it. All right.
Can I quickly, look, I know we're up against the break. I don't mean to rain on the parade right as we go to break, but I'm looking at this list. You have CJ Stroud as QB7. We list Mahomes, Burrow, Allen, Herbert, Hurts, Jackson. The problem here? Five of those six quarterbacks are in the AFC.
I know. That's the problem.
Specifically with the question of can they get to Super Bowl, the five of the six quarterbacks we say are better are in his conference.
And if the Arizona Cardinals have the number one pick, there's a chance they could trade it to the AFC team and Caleb Williams could be walking through the door. Trevor Lawrence is in the AFC. Will Levis and Anthony Richardson are in your division. You have three rookie quarterbacks in your division where, like, it's early.
And we haven't even mentioned one name. I think people largely think he's propped up by his two star receivers, but we didn't even mention Tua.
Oh, yeah. So we discussed Tua.
I know it's the head issues. I know there's reasons. I would put Stroud ahead of Tua. Don't hear what I'm not saying. But there is an argument where Tua would be good enough to also get his team to a Super Bowl.
5030 says it's a flawed argument because the percentage of quarterbacks that fall off in year two is so high. Name me some.
I mean, we named the one Mac Jones, but that was because they put a defensive coordinator as the offensive coach.
And also, like, he was never, like, that great. He was a game-managing quarterback. Yeah. Like, okay, RG3. Yeah, his knees went into a blender in the year two. Like, how many quarterbacks are this good in year one and not that good going forward? Like, Cam Newton went to a Super Bowl. Cam Newton won an MVP. Yeah. Like, yes, was Cam Newton ever the best quarterback in the NFL? No. Was he a top five quarterback in the NFL at one point? Probably not. But you know what? CJ Stroud's not facing the competition of Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, Aaron Rodgers. Those guys are washed or out of the league. So, like, the idea that he's just going to plummet from year one to year two, I don't think is accurate. Dak Prescott, he was incredible his rookie year. And he has been a very good quarterback. And honestly, I still wonder what's his trajectory if the leg break doesn't happen. He was 24-5 his rookie year. They went to the playoffs. He had MVP votes. Like, he was there in the mix his rookie year. I don't think he's lived up to that hype since, but it might be a flawed argument, but I'm going to make it. CJ Stroud's a top seven quarterback, and I'm not going to change my mind. Like, he could throw five picks this weekend against the Bengals, and I don't care. And let me ask you this. What happens if he wins? What are you going to say now?
Yeah, there's not... Well, let's be honest. The people that are already making this argument against what we're talking about aren't doing it based on logic anyway, so I don't know if the performance against the Bengals will really change their mind all that much.
All right. We will move on from this a little bit. We'll read your text. We got a bunch of stuff to get into as well with this topic, but I'm going to... Brain in the blender's coming. The worst Astros would you rather so you could find? I've got them. That's next here in the bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.com on the Chase Long.
I've got a Chase Long in my dressing room and a pack of warm beer that we can consume.
The very Solartex Community Bank Studios is currently broadcasting The Bullpen. There are no real bulls inside the pen up there, but that would be awesome, wouldn't it? But the only occupant of the bullpen is this guy, Joe George.
We're back here on The Bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. This Saturday is homecoming for the Houston Cougars. Their last game was absolutely electric, and it's time to bring that energy back to TD ECU Stadium this weekend. Ticket specials for this game are $15 tickets. Grab your family and friends and get your tickets today. Go to uhcougars.com/tickets or call 713-GO-COUGS to get your tickets today. We got a pair of tickets to give away. Watch the Cougs this weekend. We'll do caller number 5. It's 713-780-3776. 713-780-3776 for a pair of tickets to the Cougs game this weekend. All right, before we get into some Astros stuff, just some reaction to the Texans stuff and C.J. Stroud in the first segment. Lamont asked on Twitter here, if everything remains constant from Sunday but the Texans lose that game, would C.J. Stroud still be getting his praise? I think the answer to that is yes. Now, because, you know, it's not 470, so it's like what? It's like, let's say they get all the way down to the, hypothetically here, they drive all the way down and they fail to complete that final touchdown. So C.J. Stroud throws for like 440 and 4 touchdowns. I think the answer to that, for me, is still yes. Now, when you do like this conversation, the exercise that the Killer Bees went through of he's better than this, or that quarterback, I do think if you lose that game, maybe we don't have him at 7. Like, there is prisoner to the moment reaction to this. Like, you can't deny, like, not all of this. Like, it is all of it. All of it's reactionary. Like, you're watching it happen. So if he loses this weekend, I think the reaction's still pretty high. I think that we still are firm believers that C.J. Stroud is this level of quarterback. Maybe it's pulled back a tad. Like, I think in general, the way he played in the second half as a whole, that you would still view C.J. Stroud in the same light that you did if he lost. And that's where, like, I'll just to reiterate, like, if they lose this weekend, and honestly, I don't even know if it's if. I think they're going to lose this weekend to the Cincinnati Bengals. And Cincinnati Bengals are playing incredible football right now. And I would be honestly stunned if the Texans pulled the upset and beat Cincinnati on the road. So it's not going to change my view about C.J. Stroud. Now, if he goes out and lays like 3 or 4 duds, then yes, your view will change. But the reason why C.J. Stroud, we view him in the way we do right now, isn't just because of one game. It is a collection of games going back to Pittsburgh, going back to just, you know, the New Orleans game. Like, there are moments throughout the season, throws throughout the entire year. I think post week one, you could really say, you know, in that second half of the Colts game, that has helped elevate C.J. Stroud into the conversation that we're having right now. Let's see, 5044, love the bullpen. Thank you. Are y'all no longer on the weekends? No, I am here at 6. Brian, Sean, and Andrew are still doing a show from 12 to 2.
And when we will be this week. The Aggies aren't kicking us off the air this week.
Because the Aggies typically have to play at 11, so it takes them off the air.
When,
so,
when the Aggies are bad, you don't get us on Saturday very much because so they always stick them at 11.
Most of the games, they've been 11 o'clock this year. So the bullpen will return in full force in December. Once Aggie
but we
football
are back
season,
this Saturday.
Yes, once they're back this Saturday, then long term, once Aggie football is over, they'll be back every single weekend. All right, let's do some Astro stuff. We've talked so much Texans, but it is the off season. You can sign a free agent. You can hire a manager. Neither things the Astros have done so far, and frankly, the managerial search, I have this weird feeling that I'm not going to love the result. Part of that is because I thought the answer always was Joe Espada. And the fact that Joe Espada has not been named the manager of the Houston Astros yet, I'm just going to go on record that I don't think he will be. Because if there was this behind closed doors agreement that Joe Espada was going to replace Dusty Baker, and that's why he didn't take other managerial jobs, then what are we waiting for? Like, what is Jim Crane waiting for? You had the reports that he wants a big name. To be honest, I don't know what that means because
that's more for the people say that he's got Jerry Jones tendencies. That sounds like a Jerry Jones tendency.
But like, what is the big name? Like,
it would have been Craig Counsell, but exactly. He's obviously off the market now.
So like, if it's not Craig Counsell, then what is the answer?
Does he think he can get Terry Francona to unretire?
Hard pass. Like, I like Terry.
I don't know. I'm just trying to think of big names with World Series rings.
I don't know who, like, that answer is for if it's a big name, it's not Joe Espada. So because it's not a big name, because it's not, in my opinion, going to be Joe Espada, then who is it going to be? We have names being thrown out there of people I just don't know. Like, it's so funny because it's just so different than the NFL. Like, we all knew who D'Amico Ryans was, not just because he played here, because he was the defensive coordinator for one of the best teams in the NFL last year. We all know who the coordinators are for the Eagles. We all knew who Ben Johnson was when he was the OC for the Detroit Lions. He still is. We know those guys. We don't know the names of the managers. And frankly, I don't think it's the end-all, be-all of who you hire. I do think that there are guys that can completely corrupt and ruin a culture, but most of those guys are like Tony La Russa. Tony La Russa ruined all the momentum that the White Sox organization had, and now they're cutting their best player at one point from like 2 years ago. And they let Jose Abreu walk for just no reason because they just have no direction. So I think, yes, you can bottom out in your managerial hire, but I think most guys are pretty neutral and honestly don't matter as much as we want them to. But I do not believe it is going to be Joe Espada. Before we get into the would you rathers here, let's go out to Paul, who wants to talk about Espada. Paul, what's going on?
Yeah, I kind of see where you're going, but what makes us think Joe Espada is going to be a great manager? He's never managed on any level. He's been the bench coach, which means he was involved in a lot of Dusty's. I mean, I'm an anti-Dusty in terms of at least on the field decision making. He certainly either signed off on it or didn't stop it. I would prefer to get somebody from outside the organization with some different ideas who might not be so beholden to the cognoscenti in the organization, whoever that might be. But, why is Joe Espada supposed to be so great? You can't really point to anything concrete.
Well, the thing about Joe Espada, Paul, is like he's been heavily involved in the Astros organization, the behind-the-scenes stuff that we don't necessarily see. Like, Joe Espada was in pretty much every single meeting that A.J. Hinch and Jeff Luhnow would have when you're talking about the advanced analytics, the strategy of the team. He was very involved in that stuff. A lot of times, he was the guy that was trying to kind of bring Dusty Baker around on some of the analytical stuff that Dusty did not want to implement. And you're right. We don't know. Like, we don't know because, like, we don't know. Like, we'll know it when we see it. Joe Espada could absolutely be a bad hire. You know, the bench coach for the Angels could be a great hire. Brad Ausmus could be a good hire. You know, like Dre says here on the Twitch, a manager as good as the talent he has on his team. I totally agree. Now, there are a couple managers that it seems like they push the right buttons a little bit and they get more out of their team than others. A weird example of this, I think, would be Mark Kotze. Like what he did in Oakland last year, the way the A's were playing, I think you can see some like tangible proof of what he did as a manager. But yeah, we don't know. Like we don't know what he's going to be. We'll just have to wait and find out.
I get the point overall that, you know, a manager can only do so much. He can only elevate his talent so much, but we saw it. I mean, I know it's been almost 20 years now, but we saw it here in Houston in 2004 when the Astros brought in Phil Garner after the disaster that was Jaime Williams. And he turned a team that was floundering into a team that went to an NLCS and to the World Series in back-to-back seasons.
Yeah, so like I think a manager...
It was the same talent that Jimmy Williams had.
Exactly. Like, I think a manager, it does matter. I think it matters. And look, and part of it... Okay, and here's the thing, Paul. Part of it's not just the manager. There's a minority grouping of Astros fans that... I think it's a minority of the fans that do not believe in Murphy and Miller. They do not believe that the Astros pitching coaches are doing a good job. That the reason why you saw Christian Javier, Framber Valdez, and these guys fall apart this year was because of who was in place. If Joe Espada is the manager, Murphy and Miller are still going to be here. If you bring in a different manager, like a new pitching coach is on the way. That might be, honestly, the most important piece of your manager is who he hires to be the pitching coaches and to be the hitting coach. And They've just kind of run.
When did Strami leave? Was it 21?
Yeah, he left before the World Series.
So, I mean, so the same guys were criticizing Murphy and Miller for not doing enough with this year were great the year before with the same pitching coaches.
Yeah.
I know it's kind of the popular blame everything on this, but I'm putting more blame on the WBC because most of the guys we're talking about that have been affected were in the WBC.
Yeah, and I think that's totally fair. And that's why, like, I think that regardless, they get one more year to figure this thing out because – My only question about them is, did they have a hard time helping the pitchers adjust to the new rules? Like, and it's the only question I have because we don't know. But like, without the WBC, is Javier's fastball back? Is Fromber back? I mean, can they get a psychologist on the team to help him out?
They're going
to
need more than pitching coaches for Fromber.
Yeah, like they need a lot more. Like, can they keep Justin Verlander going the way he is? It's just, I think that's the ultimate part of a manager in baseball is who they're going to hire to help this organization move forward and fix their problems, because we know they're probably not going to spend a ton of money in the offseason. We'll push the Would You Rathers back to 6:45, because next up we're going to have Josh Beard, co-host of Josh and Who, that's the wrong show, of Connor and Beard. He joins us next here in the bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. We got weights and fish.
We got weights and fish.
There we go.
Deep inside the Veritex Community Bank Studios, there is a bullpen. And in that bullpen is the brilliant mind of Joe George. Call him now and challenge him in a battle of wits.
In no real surprise, the College Football Playoff Committee has released their top 25. The top four has remained unchanged. Ohio State at 1, Georgia at 2, Michigan and all their drama stays at 3, and number 4 is Florida State. So if the College Football Playoff started today, that's their final four, and the champion will be crowned here in Houston. That game will air on this station down the road as well. And let's bring in now Josh Beard, co-host of Connor and Beard. I know he's always got bad takes, hot takes. And Josh, I just want to take this moment to expose to the world that in a segment today at 2 o'clock, you said C.J. Stroud's going to be a Hall of Fame quarterback.
No. Don't twist my words. First ballot Hall of Fame quarterback.
Okay, you're right.
Now, why don't you give a little context as to what that segment was, please? You can't just go out there and throw that out and not give context to it.
Why? I can take that sound clip. I can pull it. I can put it with a little graphics and say, Josh Beard says C.J. Stroud, first ballot Hall of Famer. What was the context?
All right, we'll play these games, Joe. Start a war you don't know how to finish. I'm fine with that.
All right, so on the Killer Bees today, we went through all the NFL quarterbacks, and we ended up with C.J. Stroud as the 7th best quarterback in the NFL right now. Our list ahead of him in no particular order is Mahomes, Burrow, Allen, Herbert, Jalen Hurts, and Lamar Jackson. Do you have any issues with C.J. being at 7? Is it too low, too high, or where do you think?
No, you can see on the ESPN 97.5 Twitter account that I called C.J. Stroud, this is hilarious, and this is just duality of thought where everybody's at after watching this dude through the first half of his rookie season, but most especially on Sunday where he just freaking went off. It was amazing. I called C.J. Stroud the 7th best quarterback. I think y'all are spot on. I mean, who are you going to choose like in that 8 to 12 range to put above him? I've looked at some of the early quarterback rankings, and they've got him, a lot of people have him around like 11 or 12, but are you going to put Brock Purdy above him? Are you going to put Trevor Lawrence above him? Are you going to put Dak Prescott above him? I was listening to some of the calls that the Killer Bees got, and let me just say, Cowboys fan called in and went off talking about how Dak Prescott has a better resume, and he's better than C.J. Stroud. As the resident Cowboys fan at ESPN 97.5, having grown up in Dallas and watched the team and being both a Cowboys and a Texans fan, I can unequivocally say and definitively say through half of his rookie season, C.J. Stroud is doing things right now that I've never seen Dak Prescott do. Dak Prescott had an incredible rookie season, and there was a lot to love about it, but he's a gunslinger, and he's really, really good pre-snap. There's the one thing I will say about Dak that a lot of other quarterbacks in the league are good at. He's great pre-snap. He's good at reading a defense, making adjustments, and getting the Cowboys into the right play. But after the ball is snapped, oh my God. Like, how are you going to slide the clock out in a playoff game? CJ Stroud already is a better decision maker, better at processing, and better at working through his reads than Dak Prescott is. I think seven, top seven is spot on.
All right, so obviously CJ, and we're talking to Josh Beard here on the bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5, but obviously all this focus has been on CJ Stroud, but the football team itself is back to 500, has a monster game this weekend if they want to establish themselves. But one of the questions that I kind of found myself asking after the game on Sunday and what we saw from the offense is how sustainable do you think like this strategy of 40 throws is a game? Like, how much does not having a running game hinder the opportunity for this team going forward, or do you think they can just keep this rolling?
I think they can keep it rolling. I mean, we talked about it on Connor and Beard last week, or like early last week, before I almost died and had my near-death experience with the flu. And then we talked about it a little bit this week where the run game's just not working. Devin Singletary averaging 2.6 yards per carry is doing nobody any good. At Devin Singletary going out there, what was it? This last week it was 1.2 yards per carry. It's 26 yards on 12 rushes. He had one long carry of 9 yards. So in his other 11 rushes, he only got 17 yards. The run game is not working, and most especially the Texans have needed to start passing the ball more on early downs because they weren't. They were not last in the league, but close to last in the league, one of the bottom three teams in passes and early downs. And if you look at the most successful offenses in the league and the high flyers of the league, the guys who put up all the points and put up all the yards and win a bunch of games and the ones that we would consider contenders in for a Super Bowl or at least for an AFC-NFC championship game, they're the ones who throw the ball a bunch. They're the ones who throw the ball in early downs because they have quarterbacks that they can trust. So you look at the Bengals, it's the Chiefs, it's the Bills. These are the teams that are throwing the ball early. They're throwing the ball often, and they're probably throwing the ball way more than they run the ball. And that's today's game, especially with this offense and in this system that Bobby Slowick is running and from the Shanahan type offense. They don't really have the guy. Devin Singletary has been more explosive than Damian Pierce. They don't really have that one cut guy who just explodes through the hole whenever it opens up in his own run scheme. So passing the ball has been far more successful for this offense. And I think they can continue to throw 40 times a game, and C.J. Stroud is going to continue to pick teams apart, especially if Bobby Slowick does such a good job of making adjustments at halftime like he did in this last game. Everybody wants to talk about the 470 yards that C.J. Stroud had, and you want to look at, like, oh, man, those last two drives by him, especially that game-winning, the final drive, it's ridiculous. This offense was kind of crap in the first half. The majority, by far the majority of C.J. Stroud's yards came in the second half. It's because Bobby Slowick and C.J. Stroud himself made adjustments in the second half to throw the ball a bunch and throw it in the right spots. I want them to do that as much as possible going forward.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I think that, like, this strategy, it's I don't know, like, long term how well it works, but I think for this season, it's just the run game's not going to get any better. Like, the conversation of, is Damian Pierce not a scheme fit versus Devin Singletary was quickly put to bed this weekend. It was all around wasn't good. And it's not going to get any better. The only question I think besides that from like the offense, like the strategy of it was how much of this, like, were they forced into because they didn't have a kicker? Like I kind of wonder if when you have whoever they're bringing in to replace Fairbairn this week and however long it's going to be. Like, my only concern is that Bobby Slowick is going to go back to trying to force the run in a way he didn't instead of staying aggressive and just keep balling and throwing the ball all over the field.
That's why I'm such a big fan of let's just stick with Dari Agunbowale as the kicker until Kaimi is right.
Just keep going.
Why not? Who says no? Keep throwing the ball. And as long as he doesn't have to kick any more than like 33 or 34 yards, he's golden. I'm already a huge fan of, obviously you want to kick the ball sometimes, but I'm one of those geeky nerds. I don't talk about it a lot. I'm not one of the analytics evangelists that goes out there and tells people they're wrong if they don't follow analytics, but I love the analytics side of football. And I'm a huge believer in going for it on fourth down, like in a lot of situations. There are very few situations and reasons, if you look at the chart, to not go up for it on fourth down, especially when you're in your own territory. And so a lot of people want to play conservative and say, just put points on the board. But if you have an offense that's rolling, especially the way the Texans were rolling on Sunday, why wouldn't you go for it on fourth when you got a quarterback that you can trust? And so I hope Bobby Slowick doesn't go back to that, hey, let's run it a bunch and just set up field goal type of game plan, because it's awful. It's gross to watch. It doesn't work, and they don't have the running backs for it. So that's why I say don't bring anybody in. Let Dare Ogunbowale keep kicking the ball. We can all have fun, and we can watch CJ throw it as much as possible.
Talking with Josh Beard here on the Bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. You can catch Josh Monday through Friday from 12 to 3, co-host of Connor and Beard. On the flip side of the ball here, though, it does feel like the defense is not good. And I even if Ja'Marr Chase doesn't play this weekend and it's just Joe Burrow and T. Higgins and whoever else is out there, it really feels like they're struggling to stop anyone in the pass game. Anything that you take away from this, or is it just kind of bumps in the road of still a young and not super talented defense?
That's you hit the nail on the head with the last part. Just not talented enough yet. That's the biggest problem. Where they get killed the most, think about the Cade Otton touchdown, right? Go back to that. The Bucks thought they had won the game there because Henry Toto just couldn't. He had his head turned, didn't even have a chance to really make a play on a pretty well thrown ball by Baker. Baker saw the back of that helmet, threw it to Cade Otton, and it's a touchdown. They just don't have the talent all across the board on defense to be consistently good. We've known what this defense is. It was going to be better than it was, but it's a bend-don't-break defense. And for the most part, through the majority of the season, they have done a pretty good job of being bend-don't-break. And this time, the dam broke against the Bucks, and there wasn't a whole lot that they could do about it. I think that they've been exposed in the secondary with the lack of talent that they've got there. One of the biggest things is they keep shooting themselves in the foot with just stupid, stupid penalties. Like Shaq Griffin getting that pass interference call. I understand that the ball is wobbly. It looks like the ball could have been tipped. Who knows what's happening? But to assume that it had gotten tipped and go for the aggressive play the way he did and get the pass interference call, that's awful. But that's 2 weeks in a row that the defense has been absolutely demolished by penalty calls and stupid, stupid penalty calls. I think once they fix that and they shore that up, it's not going to be as bad. But if you look at what they've done through the majority of the season, yes, they allowed the Bucks to score 37 points, but the Bucks have good players. Rashad White seemed to figure it out last week and kept it going against the Texans this week. But they held the Panthers to 15 points. They held the Saints to 13 points. The Falcons scored 21 points, which was awful. The Steelers only 6 points. The Jaguars only scored 17 points. By and large, the bend don't break mentality of this defense has been pretty decent all throughout the season, especially considering the talent level at all three levels of on that side of the ball. So it's going to get better. It's just there are going to be games. Not excited to see what the defense looks like against the Bengals this weekend. But there's going to be games where they just don't quite look there, and a lot of it is just because of the youth and the talent.
All right, you can find him on Twitter at Josh Beard Radio, co-host of Connor and Beard here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 every single day from 12 to 3. Plus tomorrow, bonus Josh Beard. Joel Blank is out. So Josh, Jeremy, and myself will be reuniting for a show we once called The Bull Rush on a different station from 3 to 4 tomorrow. So looking forward to that, Josh, and we'll see you tomorrow.
Yeah, for that hour, it's going to be called The Killer Beards. Thanks for having me on the show, Joe. I appreciate it. See you tomorrow.
I'm sure Joel's going to love that. Also, if he hasn't hung up yet, Josh is doing What Up, H. Sean Hay, How We Doing Tomorrow. I can't wait to grade his performance. I expect it to be very good. Brian, kind of, you look like you have your doubts that Josh will do that successfully tomorrow. I'm not sure that you believe in Josh as much as you should.
Where would Josh rank on, I guess, a list of ESPN 97.5 personalities on their ability to hit the What Up H-Town, Hey, How You
Honestly,
Doing?
Honestly, he's probably number one.
If there's one thing we know about Josh, he's going to put enthusiasm into it.
That's true. All right, time to put your brains in a blender, folks. Some Astros Would You Rathers. Also, Dana Brown spoke today at the owners' meetings. We got some nuggets there from Chandler Rome as well. We'd end that next year on the Bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. We're your daddy.
You was a toilet baby. Tiff just plopped down like a little old turd, just right down in a bowl.
What do you do after? after a full day's work of producing and corralling all of the individual conflicting personalities at ESPN 97.5? Well, if you're jumping Joe George, you do another hour of sports talk. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Bullpen.
All right, just a couple quick notes here from Dana Brown. He spoke with some media members out in Scottsdale today for about a half hour. Some of the big takeaways that Chandler Rome tweeted out. Outfield help, not a priority. So maybe some of these would-you-rathers or the one of them will be a waste of time. I'm not too surprised by that. I feel like the Astros feel comfortable with Jake Meyers, Chaz McCormick, Yordan Alvarez, Mauricio Dubon, and then maybe like Jacob Melton, like making some appearances that maybe they'll add someone low level. But Dana Brown says it's not a priority. The team is open to adding a starter, which is good. I think that's a great idea. I think they need one. But the one that's the most important right now, no timeline on the managerial search, but interviews have started, and Joe Espada is the lone internal candidate. Now, I've thrown around Omar Lopez. We've seen Troy Snicker, his name be thrown around for other jobs in Major League Baseball.
They're hitting coach for those not aware.
He's being connected to the Milwaukee Brewers today now that they have an opening. So at least internally, per Dana Brown, unless they throw a curveball at us, is Joe Espada is the lone internal candidate, which is fine. Like,
well, maybe if some of these transcripts from these interviews get leaked out, maybe we could find out why when the hitting coach goes to all these interviews across the country, why they couldn't hit it at home and what the batter's eye problem was.
That'd be a great question. Because like
can we find out that answer?
If you interview him, like if the Brewers interview Snicker for a job, doesn't that have to be the first question you answer?
I mean, I would hope so.
And like honestly, it's the only thing that matters. It's like, hey, man, like, it was the same batter's eye as it was this year before. Maybe a little bit different, but like, was it really that much of an issue? Or like, what's going on here? Like, explain it to us like we're 5 years old. Of like, but Snicker also has to be careful of like how much information he would give away in case he comes back. You can only share so many secrets in an interview. I learned that when I interviewed for this job.
Did you?
I was very.
Are you sharing secrets from your last stop?
I'll tell you this. If I didn't get this job, I probably would have been in a lot of trouble. I was like,
you put all the eggs in one basket.
I was pretty confident I was coming back to Gao, and like just like the stuff I was saying, I was like, man, if I don't get this job, like that place is gonna be really upset.
You think you would have got back to them?
Well, they found out that Michael and I were coming here before we told them in either situation.
That's true. Well, so, like, nothing's a secret in this industry. Yeah.
All right, Astros would you rathers, just a couple here. We'll start with the managerial search, since it's seems like it's Joe Espada is the only lone guy today. John Morosi said that Ray Montgomery is heavily connected to this job. He is the Angels bench coach, played here. When you Google him, he's in an Astros hat on Wikipedia. That might be all I know, to be honest, of who he is.
I was about to say, what era of Astros baseball was this?
It was the gold star, the gold open star. So it's the 90s?
Gold open. Oh, yeah. But when they were in the 90s dome before they moved.
Yeah,
I don't really remember Ray Montgomery at all.
I don't think many people do, because that was all of our reaction when I told the bees what was going on. Everyone gave a who? So here's my question. Ray Montgomery, who you don't know.
I can't pick him. I don't even know him.
David Ross, who got blindsided by the Cubs.
Oh, man, the Cubs did hit him dirty.
They did, but I don't care.
Yeah, I know.
I'll always have 2016. And everyone's favorite candidate, Brad Ausmus. Pick one. Those are your three choices. Ray Montgomery, David Ross, Brad Ausmus.
You really did wake up and choose violence today. If forced to pick from those three candidates, I mean, obviously I have to strike off Ray Montgomery because I don't even know who he is. That could be a fake name. I couldn't tell you otherwise. In that situation, I'm going with Brad Ausmus because of what we talked about before with, and I don't agree that it's 100% the case, but to at least an extent, a manager can only do what his talent will allow him to do. He can only elevate those around him so much. And Ausmus coming from working with an Angels franchise that hasn't won a single playoff game under Mike Trout and then taking over the Tigers roster, totally different situations than what he'd be walking to here in Houston. So I think if Ausmus is as smart as a lot of us thought he was, when he first became a manager, he'll be instantly walking into the best roster he ever had. And I think yep. you might see a different result from Brad Ausmus than what you saw in L.A. or in Detroit.
Sure hope so.
Yeah.
Well. And we'll take your guys' questions. If you guys have questions, you can text them in 713-780-3776 like Dr. Dre. I got an Astros. Would you rather extend Altuve, Bregman, or Tucker before the 2024 season begins?
Altuve, next question.
Kyle Tucker, next question.
Really?
Because I firmly believe that even if Altuve hits the market, he will be a Houston Astro. So I think that question's really about...
Oh, okay. See, you're kind of cheating there a little bit.
I'm not. If Tucker doesn't sign this offseason, right. He will never...
That's true. If he hits the open market, he's gone.
Honestly, if Kyle Tucker, if it's this or bust, I think Kyle Tucker, this is your one moment. Even though he has 2 years left, I think this is your last opportunity to get him. Because if you don't get him now, he's going to go into the following season and be like, guys, I'm a year away.
Let's see if they argue over pennies and arbitration again before we have that.
They probably will. But I would choose Tucker because I just think that there is no chance that if you don't get him this offseason – that he will make it to the following year. So the next one I have, would you rather sign Jorge Soler to a 3-year deal worth like $45 million? I think is what the projection was. So Jorge Soler, 3 years, 45, or give up prospect of your choice for 1 year of Alex Verdugo?
I would go Soler. I think he's a better off. I mean, I know Verdugo hits for a pretty good average, but I'll take the power of Soler, especially coming to Minute Maid Park where he's hit well, right-handed hitter, hitting with the short porch there. So I would take the longer contract, the bigger power hitter, and I really don't believe Verdugo is all that much. I mean, he's a good, hitter for average, doesn't supply a lot of power. Plus you factor in the 1 year, I would much rather have Soler.
I think,
and to be frank, I don't think the Astros, after what they did with Verlander, they might not even have the prospect to get Verdugo, but
yeah, I don't know if they would either.
Playing out that scenario, I would still take Soler regardless.
Yeah, I'm curious like what his market will be if the Red Sox are actually going to move him this offseason, because like in season, like at the deadline, I think Arrigetti maybe gets that deal done. But it's just the offseason market's always a little bit different because teams that are bad are buying. So like I don't know. The only reason why I'm team Verdugo on this one over Soler, Brian, is that I know what he's like in the outfield.
You're right, because so he's in a situation where it's him and Yordan
and I don't
basically
love
splitting
that.
Left field and DH, and that would be that. Yeah, it wouldn't be great. It wouldn't be great defensively.
Yeah, I feel like that if you sign Jorge Soler, I think that signals that Yordan's going to be your everyday left fielder.
And well, here would be
kind of puts my stomach in knots.
Yeah, here would be the problem. Both Soler and Yordan, I think you can make the argument you're comfortable enough with them starting in left field here in Houston because of the short porch. But then when you go on the road, you don't want either of them in the
exactly.
outfield. So that's
the problem.
That is a problem. I will give you that. That is a problem. But I still lean Soler because the power in that bat is way more than Verdugo.
All right, and just very quickly here, would you rather sign Aroldis Chapman to a 2-year, $24 million contract and trade Rafael Montero or just keep Montero?
Just keep Montero.
I agree.
Yeah, there's almost no scenario unless you're threatening the health of my family where I would agree to take Aroldis Chapman here on the Astros.
I'm anti-Aroldis Chapman, yeah. But everyone keeps saying he's the fit for the Astros. I'm like, do you know anything about this organization and the history?
We have to go down the Roberto Osuna train again.
Not
only that, I mean, I know he had some good, decent moments down the stretch for the Rangers, and his numbers overall were good in KC, but he walks like five batters per nine? Why introduce that into, he's not going to overtake Presley, he's not going to overtake Abreu, so now you're throwing a guy in the seventh inning that's walking five guys per nine?
If they sign Aroldis Chapman, like what that means to me is if I'm at an Astros game and they're playing a good team and he comes in, I'm leaving. I'm beating traffic because we know what's going to happen is he's going to choke and blow the game and it's just going to be a total disaster. So please don't do that. Rafael Montero is fine compared to at least Aroldis Chapman. So congrats, Rafael Montero. You're better than one person in Major League Baseball that's going to make a lot of money. All right, that's going to do it for us here on the Bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. I'll be back tomorrow co-hosting the Killer Bees with Jeremy Branham from 3 to 6. So we will not do a bullpen tomorrow because 4 hours of radio is a lot. I know, hard work we have. Coming up next, well, Soccer Matters with Glenn Davis. So I will talk to you tomorrow at 3. Have a good one.
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Dude.
Like I told my last wife, I says, honey, I never drive faster than I can see. Besides that, it's all in the reflexes.